among the Snoopera episodes that are utilized, Santi Bhakti Vedanta, Shamini Pranamani, and the stage of Santi Bhakti, or Rani Pucharane, and the stage of Santi Bhakti Pucharane, and the Krishna has described himself as the source of everything, and people cannot understand his supreme position because they're covered by the modes of material nature. And he describes himself as the active principle. His potency is pervading all in existence. And people can't understand him again because of the three modes of material nature. And then he himself is above the modes, not touched by the modes, because he is the source of the potency of the modes and the source of the modes himself. And someone should invent quiet plastic bags. At least I'd buy one for you.
Why one? Many.
Huh? Why
one? I
mean
many.
And then Krishna explains that if one surrenders to Krishna, this is the process of crossing the modes of material nature, crossing beyond their potency. Because we as Tatastha Shakti, or marginal energy, we're tiny, and we always need to be controlled. So our choice is whether we're going to be controlled by Krishna's external energy, which is Maya, illusion, or we're going to be controlled by Krishna's service, Krishna's energy of service. So if we surrender to Krishna, that is a means of entering into his service. And entering into his service means that, by definition, that we're not being controlled by the external energy, the modes of material nature. So there are those who don't surrender under Krishna are placed into four categories. Namam duskritanamuda prapadyante naradama Mayaya aprita jnana asuram bhavam asrita. That's where we ended yesterday. In today, text 16, Krishna will describe the four who do surrender to Krishna. One, the ones who don't surrender, called duskritina, means miscreants or rascals or impious persons. And those who do surrender are called sukritina, or pious souls. They have a particular type of piety. There's three different types of piety in this world. One is piety in karma. And if one has piety, karma punya, he will get the benefits of karma in this world. Wealth, etc., will rain down upon him. If one has jnana punya, then one will have a particular abilities and naturally on the intellectual platform, so much knowledge ending in realization of the soul will rain down upon him. And if one has bhakti sukriti, or bhakti punya, then one naturally has an attraction for the Lord's service. So these are sukritinas. They have, these souls have enough bhakti sukriti that they surrender to Krishna. And if they have this sukriti, these four, then if they want arta gigyasa artati gyanita bhadatasapa, if they're gyanis, if they have this sukriti, the bhakti credit, so to speak, then they turn to Krishna. When they want their gyan, they end up with Krishna. And then if they don't have bhakti sukriti, they don't turn to Krishna. They don't end up with Krishna. They end up with impersonal realizations. And if someone wants wealth, that's artha. If they have piety, bhakti piety, they turn to Krishna and pray to Krishna for wealth. And if they're curious about the absolute truth, gigyasa, they turn to Krishna because those who are curious and those who want wealth, there are many ways people like that can turn, or people want knowledge, like the atheistical scientists, not scientists, but the atheistical scientists. When they want knowledge of reality, they turn away from Krishna because they don't have bhakti sukriti. And the fourth one in those who have sukriti, they are in distress. And when they're in distress, they turn to Krishna. Again, this is because of purva sanskaras, or previous impressions, bhakti impressions in their consciousness, or bhakti sukriti, or agyata sukriti. Those are the ways this is referred to. Agyata sukriti means that in their previously, at some point, without knowing what it was, they did some devotional service. Say, if a devotee asks them for a donation, for example, but they have no idea of devotional service, they don't know what a devotee is, but they assist him in some way or another, or he needs help for something, and they assist. There are many people like the people at the styrofoam place are really a good example of people do. They have no idea that what devotional service is, but they like the monks, so they do it, and they're taking prasadam. It's another agyata sukriti. They're taking prasadam, so that's in one sense, or people hearing the Mahamantra or looking at the book about Krishna. So this is one of the missions or businesses of Prabhupada's movement of the Krishna Conscious Society, is to increase the bhakti piety of the people in general by through prasadam distribution, book distribution, and Harinam. So there are four of them, of these pious souls. Here's the verse. Chatur Vidha, there are four divisions. Bhajante Mam, who worship me. Jana, Sukritino, Arjuna. They are Sukritinos. These people, these Jana, these persons are Sukritinos. They have piety, bhakti piety. And they are Arta Gigyasa Artati. They are, Arta means they want wealth. Gigyasa, they are curious. Excuse me, they're distressed. Arta means distressed. Gigyasa, they're curious. And artati means they are arta arti. They're desiring material gain. And then fourth is the jnani. So these are the four divisions. Jnani, cha, bharatasava. Here's Prabhupada's translation. O best amongst the bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, and the usual example who is given of the one who comes to Krishna because of the great distress he is in, is Gajendra. And what kind of a body was Gajendra in? Do you know? Do you know?
Elephant.
Yes, an elephant. It's quite wonderful, yes? He is an elephant, and he turned to Krishna. He wasn't an elephant, actually. He was a soul. And in his previous life, he was, what was he? He wasn't the king. The crocodile was the king. But he was someone who was a devotee and got himself into trouble. Who was, wasn't the crocodile king Indra?
One was King Hugo and one was
Indradumna. Yeah, the crocodile was Indradumna, I think his name was. Anyway, we can find out. But I can't find out right now.
Huh?
The who?
The villain.
Who? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. So Gajendra is the distressed, the desire of wealth. Dhruva Maharaj is the general examples given. He who is inquisitive or asked questions because he wanted to understand about the, curious to know about the Absolute Truth, was Shaunaka Rishi, and one who was searching for knowledge of the Absolute was Sukadeva. These are the four examples that are usually given. Then, out of these four, which one is the best? So Krishna explains that in the next verse. Tesham jnani nityukta eka bhaktir vishishyate priyo hi jnanino dhyartam aham satya mama priya. Of these, the one who is in full knowledge of me is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in pure devotional service is the best. For I am very dear to him and he is dear to me. Because the jnani is the best, he's mama priya. He's not only the best, but he's dear to me. Why is that? Why is the jnani so dear to Krishna? He even says mama priya. Aham sa cha mama priya. He's also very dear to me. Because they come to Krishna not wanting anything from him. Not that the others aren't dear to Krishna. But the jnani is more dear because they don't want anything from Krishna. They don't care if their distress is removed. They don't care if they get their satisfaction, material satisfaction. They're very detached. So they can make progress very easily. But the difficulty is they tend to what? No, not when they're devotees. Huh? No, but they tend to be Santa Bhaktas, which means they like to sit and think about Krishna and how beautiful he is. I guess they meditate on the beauty of Krishna, his form, his lotus feet, his beautiful hair, his beautiful eyes, and they're completely enthralled with meditating on Krishna. So what's wrong with that? Because they don't, huh? No service, yes. Yeah, so that's the tendency of the Santa Bhakta. So actually in Raja, in Vrindavan, there's no full Santa Bhakti, Bhaktas. And it's even, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas don't even actually consider Santa Ras one of the four Ras, the five Rasas, because of that.
So what does the jnani have to do to not be a Shanta Bhakta?
Service.
It has to be service along with, that's why it's sometimes probably safe.
It's always mixed then with dasya. Dasya, or like the example is in Vrindavan, like the trees. One would think of them as in Shantaras because they don't do anything, but actually they have feelings of service. grass and the trees, or Haridasa Varjo of Giriraj Govanan. He's immovable, but he likes to serve so much, so he's Paniya Suyavasa Kandara 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 Mula. He's serving in so many ways. He's serving anyone who wants to serve Krishna. He wants to serve that person and assist that person in serving Krishna. And the grass thinks, oh, if Krishna steps on me, it will be so nice, and his tender lotus feet won't get hurt by any pebbles or anything like that. And I can be fed to the cows. And
Krishna's very active.
Huh?
He's very active.
In service, because it's devotion. Huh? That's what the gopis see. So they are. So Krishna continues, all these devotees are undoubtedly magnanimous souls, meaning the four different divisions. But he who is situated in knowledge of me, I consider to be just like my own self. So dear, because one's own self is dearest to one. Being engaged in my transcendental service, he is sure to attain me, the highest and most perfect goal. Yes, there's verses in the 11th canto that describe when Krishna says to Uddhava that you are dear to me than Balaram even, or Goddess Lakshmi. You are dear to me even than my own self. Lord Shiva. Or you are like my own self, he says. And then Krishna Chakravarti Thakur gives a comment. Krishna says the Gyanis, Bhaktas are like my own self. But the Prema Bhaktas, they are even more dear to me than my own self. Let's see. No, the right book isn't there. The purest devotee is more dear to Krishna. Yeah, aham bhakta paradhino. And na paryeham. Krishna says to Durvasa Muni, he aswatantra iva dvipa dvija, that I'm completely I'm controlled by my devotees. Aham bhakta paradino. I'm controlled by my pure devotees. They don't know anything but me, and I don't know anything but them. This is the nature of the pure devotee. Aswatantra. I'm not independent, because the Vasamuni asked Lord Narayan to stop the chakra from chasing him, threatening his life. And Lord Narayan said, I can't do it because I'm not independent. You'll have to go to Ambarish Maharaj. And he said, the devotees, sadavo vidayam mayam, sadavam vidayam tvaham. The devotees are in my heart and I am in their hearts. So that's also an interesting concept. The devotees are in, if Krishna is in the devotees' hearts, right? So you just imagine it, right? So here's a devotee, and Krishna is in his heart, right? And then in Krishna's heart, what's there? The devotee. So in your heart is Krishna, and then in Krishna's heart, and then who is the devotee? And who's in the devotee's heart? And then who's in Krishna's heart? So it's like looking at the mirrors when you have two mirrors facing each other. It goes on and 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 on. How small does it get? Too small. Very small. It goes on forever. Because Krishna is infinitely is there always in the devotee's heart, and the devotee's always in his heart. It means that they're thinking about each other. Always. This is what it means to be a devotee. To always be thinking of Krishna. And when the devotee is impelled by the rules and regulations that he reads in the Shastra, in the Bhagavad Gita, that should always think of me, Manmano, Bhavamad Bhakto, oh, therefore I should always think about Krishna. So he tries to remember that he should always think about Krishna, and he thinks about Krishna. And then there are other devotees who are past that stage, who have got the benefit of the Shastra already, and they naturally think about Krishna in love. Because they love him, their thoughts naturally wander to him. That's a very advanced stage. That's even the stage of asakti, or of attachment. When your mind wanders on that stage, it wanders to Krishna instead of away from Krishna. And Prabhupada quotes in his first, in his purport. It is not that devotees are less complete in knowledge or are not dear to the Lord. The Lord says that all are magnanimous because anyone who comes to the Lord for any purpose is called a Mahatma, or great soul. The devotees who want some benefit out of devotional service are accepted by the Lord because there is an exchange of affection. Out of affection, they ask the Lord for some material benefit, and when they get it, they become so satisfied that they also advance in devotional service. But the devotee in full knowledge is considered to be very dear to the Lord because his only purpose is to serve the Supreme Lord with love and devotion. Such a devotee cannot live a second without contacting or serving the Supreme Lord. Let's think of what that means. He can't live a second. He can't breathe a breath. He thinks of every thought, every breath is wasted in this. The thought is filled with thoughts of Krishna. Every word is wasted unless it's glorification of Krishna. So therefore, similarly, the Supreme Lord is very fond of his devotee, and he cannot be separated from him. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 9.4.68, the Lord says, Sadavo Ridayam Mahayam Sadunam Ridayam Toham But Anyate Na Zananti Naham Tebyo Manakapi. The devotees are always in my heart, and I am always in their heart. I am always in the hearts of the devotees. The devotee does not know anything beyond me, and I also cannot forget the devotee. There's a very intimate relationship between me and the pure devotees. Pure devotees in full knowledge are never out of spiritual touch, and therefore they're very much dear to me. And then Krishna continues and says, Bahunam janamam ante janamam prapanyante vasudeva savamiti samahatma sadolava. So, after many, many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me. So that path of being dear to Krishna still goes further to the point of surrender. And then they are no longer, they no longer have any desires. Even the jnani, even the desire to know, is gone. So after many births, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Prabhupada's purport. The living entities, while executing devotional service or transcendental rituals, may, after many, many births, may actually become situated in transcendental pure knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal of spiritual realization. In the beginning of spiritual realization, while one is trying to give up one's attachment to materialism, there is some leaning towards impersonalism. And when one is further advanced, he can understand that there are activities in the spiritual life, and that these activities constitute devotional service. Realizing this, he becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrenders to him. At such a time, one can understand that Lord Sri Krishna's mercy is everything, and that he is the cause of all causes, and that this material manifestation is not independent from him. He realizes the material world to be a perverted reflection of spiritual variegatedness, and realizes that in everything there is a relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna. Thus he thinks of everything in relation to Vasudeva, or Sri Krishna. Such a universal vision of Vasudeva precipitates one's full surrender to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna as the highest goal. Such surrendered great souls are very rare. Any questions so far? So then the question is asked that, okay, there are those who don't surrender, and they are called what? What are the ones who don't surrender? Yes. And what are the, and there are those who surrender to Krishna, what are they called?
Sukhitas.
But what happens, what about those who surrender, but not to Krishna, to something other than Krishna? What category do they fit into? So Krishna is going to answer that question. Karmas tas tar ritigyana prapadyante anya devata tam tam niyamam astava prakritya niyata svaya. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires surrender to demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. So, did you ever meet anyone who surrenders to something, very surrendered to something, but it's not Krishna? Huh? No. No. Mm-hmm. Yes, other than yourself. Because you're surrendered to Krishna.
So the money.
Yeah, so many obligations to family, to nation, or up to the point in the Vedic system of surrendering to the demigods. So many different demigods, and then you have to follow the rules and regulations. You have a boss in the office, and he says, "Do this." Does your boss ever tell you, "Do this"? Not like that. What does he say? Could you do something? No. Yeah. How about your boss? No one is my boss. I'm my own boss. Only Krishna is my boss. But you have to please them. And you have to follow the rules of the office. You have to come on time. Sometimes you have to stay late. No?
I mean, it is work, but you
don't
have to.
No. So if someone worships the demigods, or even take it to the level of you're taking care of your family, and that you're surrendered fully to your family or to your work or to your country, but especially in relationship to the demigods, but including those, where does the power to award results come from? You surrender to demigods, and or you go to your boss and you do what he says, and he awards you with some financial remuneration. And where does the power to come from that gets the rewards? Krishna's going to say, he says that in the next verse. He says that I am in everyone's heart as a super soul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod and make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity, endowed with such a faith, this is 22, he endeavors to worship a particular demigod and obtains his desires. But in actuality, these benefits are bestowed by me alone. So it's actually Krishna that is paying you. It's not your boss, ultimately, because if he withdraws the boss's ability to pay you, then the boss cannot pay you. So it's ultimately Krishna. So we really should see like that. We should see that. We should see Krishna's hand is in everything. In every benefit, we have to, on one level, in this Kali Yuga, we serve so many masters. It's not actually the Vedic system to have a boss. Because unless one is of a sutra mentality means to have a boss, that you have to please someone and you give up your independence. But in the Vedic system, the Brahmins would, unless there was an emergency, they wouldn't work for someone. The Kshatriyas, they would never work for someone. They would never ask anyone for any charity or anything like that. They would never ask anyone's permission. And other rules governing them. And the Vaishyas set up their little business and they made some money, but they didn't have to work for someone. But the Sudras had to work for someone. That was their mentality. So if you support yourself in that way, it makes the mind stronger, because naturally, when you have someone above you in that situation, naturally you have to please them. You're always thinking about how to please them and satisfy them. And the Vedic system was meant to bring us to the point of trying to please Krishna. And not anyone else. That's the ultimate. Huh? Yeah. So, but what we have to do, considering that we all have to have bosses in this world, and we're not living in the Vedic system, or therefore we should remember this point, that ultimately it's Krishna. It is Krishna who is giving all the benefits. They are bestowed by him alone. So this is in general principle. Any questions about this?
What's your obligation to the if he's the one who's giving the conviction?
Oh, Krishna?
Yeah. What's your obligation to the one who is coming through, who you feel is, who identifies the giver of it?
External. And you shouldn't identify him as the independent giver. So you work in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. That's the idea. So you work in your office or whatever in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. You have to do that. So try to make the best of a difficult situation. Huh? You can increase your piety in that way and decrease your impiety, the reaction. There's ways to do that in the Vedic system through Vedic sacrifices and things like that. You can go around your karma, you can change your karma, but you have to pay in a different way. You can just pay it in a different way, which means you're going around it, but you have to pay. Like this in the Mahabharata, there's one story, it's been a while since I read it, how there was a king who really, he wanted a son. And then a Brahmin, he had a friend that was a Brahmin. So this Brahmin said, "Don't worry, I know how to perform a sacrifice that will get you a son." So he performed the sacrifice, and the king got a son. And then one day, as the son was growing up, he was still very young. The king heard him crying, you know, fearfully. So the king ran to him, and he was in so much anxiety because he was his only son. And he saw that the boy, he had to save the boy from a dangerous situation or something like that. So the king was in so much anxiety. He thought, you know, to have one son when you're a king is worse than having no sons, because you're always in anxiety about the welfare of your son, especially for kings, because they need to pass on their kingdom to their son. That's their duty. He's talking to his Brahmin friend like that. He said, "I know how to perform a sacrifice that you can have, I don't remember the exact number, but 100 sons. But what you have to do is you have to take that one son and offer him in the sacrifice." So he said, "Well, it's worth it." So it was such a wild sacrifice in one sense that the child was offered, and the smell of the flesh of the child entered into the nostrils of all his queens, of his 100 queens, I don't remember the exact number again, and as a result of that, they all became pregnant, and they gave birth, each of them gave birth to a son, and then the king had his 100 sons, or whatever it was, and he was satisfied. And then one day, as it happens to everyone, the Brahmin passed away, he died. And then after some time after that, the king died. And the king went to hell. And there he saw the Brahmin. And he said, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "Well, I had to suffer because I performed that sacrifice. That was, I, in other words, I gave up all my piety to do that. And I had to suffer. Now I have to suffer." And the king also was there. So we have to pay. But the devotees have a different system. They don't do things like that. They say, "Okay, anyway, Krishna's mercy." But that reminded me of another little story that Prabhupada told, which is off the topic, but it's about going to hell. There was a man who was very attached to his family, big family, and he had a bad habit of drinking alcohol. Someone told him, one of his pious friends told him that if you drink, you're going to go to hell and really suffer. And the man said, "Well, I'm not the only one in my family who drinks. My father also drinks. Is he going to go to hell?" "Yes. If you drink, you go to hell, so your father's going to go to hell too." "Well, my three brothers, they also drink. Does that mean they're all going to go to hell?" And he said, "Yes. If you drink, you go to hell. So your father and your three brothers are going to go to hell." He said, "I actually tell you the truth, I have a really big family. And we all drink. I have cousins, I have five cousins here, and this side, this three cousins on that side, and then their children, and they all drink. Does that mean everyone's going to go to hell? He said, yes. If you drink, you go to alcohol, you go to hell. They're all going to go to hell. You and your whole family are going to go to hell. And he said, okay, at least I won't be lonely there. I'll have all my, we'll all be together. We won't even be hell. Prabhupada told that story, but he told it better. But it's not like that. It's not fun. So then Krishna says, so someone thinks that if I worship the demigods and I get the results and they're coming from Krishna, so I can just have my material desires and worship the demigods. What is the problem?
Difficulty.
What is the problem? Difficulty. And then Krishna in 23 says, men of small intelligence, antavatu phalam tesham, tadbhavat yalpamedasham, devan devo yato yanti, madbhakta yanti, mamapi. The men of small intelligence worship the demigods. And their fruits, they get their fruits, but they are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods. That's what they ultimately achieve. But my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. So there's direct and indirect worship. Because ultimately everyone worships is serving Krishna. Yayatam mam prapanyante. Even if you're an atheist, and this is described in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, that all the arguments and all the reasonings that you have, they're all given by Krishna. So you're getting your intelligence from Krishna, and you're serving Krishna by accepting the intelligence that he's giving you. And it's just a you don't want to serve, you don't want to know him, he doesn't want to know you. It's just reciprocation with Krishna. So on one level, no one can avoid serving Krishna, but one type of service to Krishna, serving his external energy, is indirect. And that brings one type of result, while direct service brings another type of result. An example is that when you're in the prison, you're still following the laws of the government, but indirectly, forcibly and indirectly. But the free people, they're willingly following the laws of the government. They're willingly, and they're free, and they're directly following it, willingly. And they're free citizens, and their benefit is so much more. So when we serve Krishna by indirectly through his serving Maya, we're also serving Krishna, but we don't get the benefit of the service to Krishna. It's when, in this example here, you go to the planet of the demigods, you don't go to Krishna's planet. And if you go to the planet of the demigods, when your piety runs out, you fall down again. And back down into the world of karma, the whirlpool of the world of karma. But the devotees, they reach Krishna's own abode, Goloka Vrindavan. Some also interesting verses, more interesting verses. So we will continue with that next week, Krishna willing. Any questions or comments? Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
It just struck me when I heard the series of verses describing how the one who approaches seeking lodges, then it culminates in the this after many births and deaths.
Yeah.
When he's actually acknowledged, surrenders onto me.
Yeah.
For some reason when I heard that, it struck me as a slow process. You know, to find and attain Purnam.
Yeah, it sounds like it, if you take the gradual path, but if you take the path of surrender, of direct surrender, then it doesn't have to be gradual like that, because the Gyani, that was the point, wasn't it, that he loses his interest in just getting Jnana, but he wants to serve Krishna after some time. Yeah. After many, many births and deaths.
So is it correct that although Krishna is describing of the four that tends to be that time when you're not speaking of the ultimate
right. Yeah. And then that's why Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the pure devotees are on still another level, that are more dear to Krishna still. But it's also interesting that Krishna is not ungrateful. That people who turn to Krishna for wealth, he still says they're very dear to him. He's not, boy, you're what kind of devotion is that? You know, you're just asking me for things all the time. But still. So that shows that a very kind disposition of Krishna. And the Jnanis don't want anything as gross as that, but they have a subtle needs. And also there's a dependence on their own abilities that keeps them somewhat separate until they surrender.
So therefore, though we can say that they're best not directly approaching, seeking There's something,
but then when they become pure devotees, like Sukadeva, then they're not Jnana Bhaktis anymore. But they have a tendency towards Santa Ras.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, not on that level. Not when you're Sukadev Goswami.
Yeah.
Not when you're the four Kumaras. But it's a step above impersonalism. The four Kumaras were another example. And they had a conversion experience when they smelled the fragrance of the Tulsi offered to the feet of Krishna. And their minds became disturbed or agitated on the spiritual level, and their minds were incapable of becoming disturbed or agitated on the material level. And they knew this was something very special by the ecstatic transformations they were experiencing. And then they became devotees at that point. But before that they didn't understand what the Supreme was. Also another example of that was Maitreya Muni. Before he heard from Krishna, the Chattasloki Bhagavatam, at the same time Krishna was speaking to Uddhava, just before his departure, before that time, he was an impersonalist. But then he heard that the goal was Vaikuntha. So Krishna himself was saying that the goal was Vaikuntha, it wasn't to give up one's individuality. So he had a conversion experience also, so much so that he was instructed Vidur.
I haven't understood it right, but is it right that every conditioned soul comes from one of the four difficulties, and then by the grace of the devotees, the Dhansam Agya difficulty, and then
yes. And then what?
Then can be the tendency to turn to Krishna.
Yes.
Because the difficulty gives some faith.
And taste.
Mm-hmm.
But Prabhupada used to say that quite regularly, that if they're not surrendered to Krishna, we immediately place them in one out of four categories. Or, you know, either, what is it? Imanduskitaro, Papadhyante Naradama, Mayaya, Pitakyana, Salim. Either Mudha, Naradama, Mayaya, Apritagyana, or an Asura. So immediately, you're in one of four categories if you weren't surrendered. And then on the other side, it's Sukriti, Bhakti Sukriti, but it's very much association and hearing. So at some point, there's some association with the devotee in there. There has to be association with devotees because bhakti comes from association with devotees. And then, theoretically, one can immediately surrender to Krishna as soon as one understands. But practically, it takes time. This is described in the Nectar of Devotion. Because we come into one of those four things where we're in the center, so that devotional service isn't really, it's not pure devotional service. It's a little somewhat business, even up to the point of the jnani wanting to be free from all suffering. That's the lure of a jnani. Or have one's curiosity satisfied, or to be wanting wealth, artha, arti. But Krishna doesn't reject those people. He considers them very dear to him because they're turning to him. But how much more is the jnani dear to him, because he doesn't want anything gross on that level? But how much more is the pure devotee? And the pure devotee, as we're saying, is so dear to Krishna that he's dear to Krishna. Krishna likes the pure devotee more than he likes himself. It sounds trivial if we say he likes them. He gives himself to his pure devotee, the prema, but on the prema level. He gives himself, and then there's the Brijbasis. So completely control Krishna that Krishna cries. When Mother Yasoda shakes her finger at him, Krishna's afraid. His consciousness becomes completely captivated by the loving mood of Mother Yasoda, and he, practically speaking, forgets that he's the Supreme Lord. When once Mother Yasoda was holding little Krishna, he was very young. At that time, maybe 1 year old. Yeah. And then Kamsa had sent one demon named Trinavarta on Asura. And Krishna perceived something was going to happen, or Yogamaya perceived something was going to happen. So Krishna became very heavy, because Trinavarta's idea was in the form of a whirlwind, like a little tornado, or a big tornado, to carry Krishna and Mother Yasoda away, kill them. So Krishna, or Yogamaya, to protect Mother Yasoda, and also Krishna does things, he does many things at once. He started feeling very, very heavy. So heavy, and Mother Yasoda, like Satya somehow or another, always remains light, and you can carry her. But Krishna, and sometimes she feels very heavy, maybe, but Krishna got so heavy that Mother Yasoda couldn't hold him anymore. So he had to put her down, Krishna down on the ground. And then Yogamaya inspired Mother Yasoda to go in the house for a minute, to look at something, to do something. It was all the pushing of Yogamaya. And just then, Trinavarta came down. And so there's this whirlwind and picked up Krishna and took him away. And then Mother Yasoda came back to our senses and said, what have I done? I put Krishna down. So Yogamaya allowed her to think like her natural love to come out. And then she ran back and she saw Krishna was gone. And it was just after a few seconds, practically speaking. And she went mad. She just fell to the ground, dead, practically speaking. What have I done? What have I done? No Krishna. And in that thinking of Krishna, of where is Krishna, and what have I done, in that lamentation about Krishna, and it's all Krishna-centered, and it's the cause of the deepest of being with Krishna. And therefore it's a variety of ecstasy. But that's Madhya Yasoda's love. Where is Krishna? Just a few moments. She thought something like immediately, because the nature of parents, especially mother, they're always worried about their children. So when the child, as soon as she saw Krishna wasn't there, she said, oh, something terrible must have happened. It's all my fault. And went into ecstasy in a particular variety of separation. And those two points, the separation and meeting in Melan, they feed each other. They feed each other, nourish each other. But the center of all rasa is the staibhav, or the fixed relationship with Krishna. And without that, nothing happens. So the fixed relationship with Krishna has to be established before one can experience rasa. Fixed loving relationship with Krishna.
Does that mean you can't experience anything until you have that?
You can't experience rasa until you have that.
Now what do you mean by rasa?
By?
In terms of appreciation or taste?
No. Taste, appreciation is one thing, taste is another, attachment is another, and then bhava bhakti is another, and then rasa is something completely different. It's a product of prema that one has to have. His relationship with Krishna to experience true rasa. Our relationship with Krishna, until we have love for Krishna, we're getting the shadow. But Krishna appreciates that. Krishna appreciates the devotee's thoughts of him, even though they're not really contacting Krishna by those thoughts. In one sense, because they're contacting their own mind mostly. But Krishna appreciates that attempt and awards them by the attempt to be in relationship with Krishna, to think about Krishna. Krishna gradually purifies them and gives himself to the devotees by the attempt. Yeah, because he's just like he feels so much appreciation for even the the devotee who is coming to him wanting material things. So what to speak of someone who's trying to think about him and engaging in the process of hearing and chanting. Huh? Yes, we need reassurance. Okay, Hare Krishna.